Welcome to Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit, episode 37. And before we start, I want to give a shout out to my sister-in-law, Gail, a devoted listener of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. I am actually recording from her home in Pittsburgh. So thank you, Gail, for hosting this episode of Booty and Bossy. And Happy New Year to everybody. We're excited that we're going to start the new year by featuring a recipe from one of our favorite people, Ina Garten. We've mentioned her many times before. And then Booty and I also assigned ourselves a little Christmas homework, and we read her memoir. Be Ready When the Luck Happens. And we're going to talk about that. But before I turn it over to Booty with the recipe, which is for carrot ginger soup, this was actually a recipe that Booty was first introduced to in the 1980s from the Cosmopolitan Club, from Beth Coppersmith's Cosmopolitan Club recipe in Philadelphia from January 12th, 1988. Booty and Mom went to a demonstration of how to make this soup.
Yeah, mostly what I remember is eating the soup. It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Mom. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. And Mom never took me to the Cosmopolitan Club, so
I love the name, the Cosmopolitan Club. It was, I think, a club for women downtown Philadelphia. And mostly, I think it was a place that she could have lunch with her friends. But they also had seminars, lectures, and apparently cooking demonstrations. I did not realize until I just looked at the recipe that it was actually a January event. So it's good. I have been making my version of this for a long time. And what I do, we're going to use the proportions from Ina's recipe. Basically, this is a very forgiving recipe. You want to start with melting some butter and adding some onions. I use maybe 4 tablespoons of butter. Apparently, they did not use that many in the Cosmopolitan recipe. I do like to have a fair amount of oil or fat for the onions so that they don't burn, because I like to cook them for a really long time. I small dice the onions. I usually use between a half an onion and a full onion, depending on how much you like onions, who you're cooking it for.
I like onions, so I usually use at least a whole onion, because I also don't ever know what to do with half of an onion. So,
well, yeah. There's that. I like to use my Le Creuset for this recipe because you can saute your onions in the bottom of the pot and then don't cover it all the way, just leave a little bit of an opening. And you're going to cook that for maybe like 10 minutes till the onions are really soft and you have a wonderful smell.
That tells you dinner is coming.
Then you add your carrots. So the other thing I really like about this, I have to say, there's something about, for me, I like to peel my carrots. Bossy likes to scrub.
Yeah, I usually scrub them. I don't know.
Unfortunately, Ina is with Bossy on this.
Yes, all great people scrub and don't. I actually do peel them if I'm going to eat them raw.
I cut them into maybe half inch pieces, rounds, add those to the pot. And I use a lot of carrots. I can easily use 2 pounds of carrots in my soup. Just sort of mix it with the onions and let it cook for maybe a couple minutes. Just sort of mix it in there, coat it. And then I do not add garlic. You do you.
I do add garlic. And I will say that one of the things I like about this recipe is once you get the onions in, while they're cooking, you can prep the carrots. And you know how I like those recipes where they're timed such that you have just enough time from the cooking of one thing to prep the next thing so you can throw that in. So that's another advantage.
And that's what I was going to say. I like the peeling of the carrots. To me, that's sort of like vacuuming. Like there's some chores that I don't mind. And peeling carrots is one of those chores. I just feel like I get the pile of unpeeled carrots and then zip, zip, zip. You need to have a good peeler.
Okay.
I have one of those ceramic peelers. I like that one. But anyway, so you add your carrots, then you add your stock. I would say I use about a quart. I do not want my soup to be too soupy.
Yeah, I think you want a nice thick soup, but the nice thing is that you can always add more stock, you know. I tend to err on the side of adding less and then at the beginning and then adding more.
Exactly. And then once that has cooked for maybe an hour, I like to make it early in the day and then it's ready for whenever. But I would say it needs to cook for.
Probably about 45 minutes. I mean, you want the carrots to be nice and soft and fully cooked through, and they're kind of kicking up that nice broth too.
Minus is 30 minutes. And then you want to puree it. So I have found the stick blender just doesn't do it. It seems like a really nice idea because you just keep it in the pot, and we all like that one pot thing.
We do. Yeah.
Not having to wash the blender, but it just doesn't give you a nice velouté. But so velouté is French for velvet and also a very velvety soup. So if you want a velouté, you have to use a blender. You might be able to squeeze it if you have a big blender. You might be able to squeeze it into one, but you might have to do two batches.
Yeah. I think even with, I usually use a Cuisinart or a food processor, and even with that, I have to do several batches to get that nice velouté, which it is one of the reasons we wanted to feature this recipe this time of year is, well, I'm sure I'm the only one who's maybe indulged a little bit too much during the holidays. And this is a great simple recipe that is healthy and you can feel very virtuous eating it. And it's also a recipe that keeps well in the fridge. And you can have it a couple of days for lunch or dinner. It makes a lot and it keeps well. And do you want to talk about adding cream booty and
Yeah, I would add it at the end. So after you've already blended it, then you add maybe quarter cup of cream. The Cosmopolitan one, they're skimpy on the butter, but then they say 2 cups of half and half or light cream, which seems like a lot. You could also do a little dollop in everybody's bowls with a little bit of chives or parsley, some kind of garnish on top, and then a nice baguette and a salad.
voila.
Et voila, a delicious veggie. Now, Ina has another method of doing it that I have yet to try, but basically, she roasts the carrots before blending them. Have you ever tried that?
I do generally roast the carrots, and I do feel like it gets a nice roasted flavor. I don't know by the time you add the stock and the cream, if you still get that flavor, but I do feel like it makes a difference to have the roasted veg. They just, you get a more concentrated carrot flavor when you roast them compared to just cooking them on the stove, in my humble opinion. So I'm going to have to side with Ina on the scrubbing and the roasting.
And oh my God, we forgot the ginger.
Yes.
So for the ginger, you want to add that before the cream. What Bossy and I agree on is that you keep your ginger, they sell ginger at Costco in these large bags. Well, unless you're making candied ginger or ginger tea all the time, something I don't know how you would be using up that much ginger. So we like to store ours in the freezer.
Yeah.
And then when you're adding it to the soup, you're just grating the frozen ginger. You don't have to peel it or anything into the soup. And it adds a wonderful warmth.
Yeah, you get that ping at the end. You get the ginger taste at the beginning, and then you get that sort of zing of the ginger at the end. And it's surprising that it goes so well with carrots. But to me, it's just a wonderful combination.
Yeah, I agree. So yes, try this soup. I have it actually pretty much all year, but especially in the winter. There's something that is so comforting about it, and it's healthy.
It is healthy, especially if you're not adding that much cream. And I do feel like it's the kind of thing that if you've got your giant Costco bag of ginger in the freezer and you've got a big bag of carrots and some homemade stock, you've pretty much got everything that you need for the soup. And it really doesn't take that long. I'd say probably the quicker way would be to cook the carrots on the stovetop. Roasting them is a little more involved and does involve a pan. But if you are roasting something else or turning on the oven anyway, that's often when I'll just throw the carrots in because I've already got the oven on. So.
Yeah, I think that's part of why I like the stovetop version is that it's a little faster.
Well, Booty, what did you think about Ina's memoir, Be Ready When the Luck Happens?
Love that title.
Yes.
I thought it was great. I really could hear Ina. Of course, I did listen to it, and so I really actually was hearing Ina because she does the audio book. But whether you're reading it or listening to it while you're knitting, it felt like her. It felt
Yes.
authentic, genuine. And by the way, she does mention knitting.
She does. That's right. This is our knitting pop culture moment. Do you want to tell about that?
She talks about that she was working at a store.
It was a lingerie store.
A lingerie store. And she was in the booths where you try on clothes. And she's on her break, I guess. And she was knitting sweaters for her husband, Jeffrey.
Well, I don't think they were married yet. She was knitting a sweater. And she mentions at another point that she enjoyed knitting fishermen sweaters. So I th she must be a pretty accomplished knitter. That it always bothered her that her father would say, What have you accomplished today? And for some reason, saying, well, I knit a fisherman sweater. I don't know how you would knit a fisherman sweater in one day, but that would never be regarded as an accomplishment by her father. She is a knitter. It's not a big part in the book, but there are several mentions of knitting and knitting something for Jeffrey in the changing booth at the lingerie store. I don't She seems like she was a terrible employee. Well, she actually says that herself,
Okay.
that she was much better at running her own businesses than working for somebody else. But I agree. I really enjoyed how she took you through the process of how she ended up buying the Barefoot Contessa. She was working in a job in the White House and realizing how much she hated it. It was in the budget department and, writing all these briefs. I can't even imagine Ina writing budget briefs for enriched uranium. It just seems totally not who she is. And it wasn't. But then she sees this ad for a specialty cheese shop. It's the 26 words that changed her life. Catering gourmet foods and cheese shoppe twice. Top number one location with unlimited potential, all new equipment and decor in the Hamptons, gross over six figures in the summer alone. And what it didn't say, of course, was that it really was only a summer business. But seeing that description that she goes home and says, and by now Jeffrey is her husband and says, I think I found the thing. I want to buy a gourmet cheese shop. And he says, okay, let's go take a look, which I found astonishing that he was open to that because they were living in Washington at the time. And she ended up buying the place and living up there in the summer. And
Right. But, and I have to say, key emphasis on the word gross,
yes.
not net six figures, but gross six figures, which means that they barely broke even. That was with a ton of work and I felt like one of the themes throughout the book was that it might be hard. That I think you look at someone like Ina, who's very successful, and say, wow, how did she do it? Well, guess what? It wasn't easy. It was a lot of hard times where she, and a hard times with her husband, which was, I think a lot of us look at Ina and Jeffrey and see this ideal couple where they're so in love. They just seem to really enjoy each other's company, and they do. But there was a point where they were, there were many points where they were not living in the same city.
Or even in the same part of the world. I mean, there was 2 points where he took the job in Tokyo and then a job in Hong Kong, and they were commuting every month or so to see each other.
He was in the military, so he was also apart then. Yeah, so they spend a lot of time apart, and that, guess what, is not easy in a marriage. Not to mention that this was the 50s and 60s when if a woman had a job, it was okay, you can have this job, but then you're also doing all the work at home. And in Ina's case, she was excelling at the cooking, so she was making these gourmet meals every day. So that was certainly taxing.
Yeah, and I did appreciate how she told the story of her childhood, which was not a happy childhood. She has an older brother, and her father was a very successful surgeon. Her mother was a dietitian. You would think, oh, that's where her love of food came from, when in fact, really, her mother's approach to food, she was not a cook. She was not particularly interested in food as the source of pleasure, of love, of an expression of community. Her mother was very much just about food as sustenance. How many calories are in that chicken breast, and how is that converted? She had a very sort of scientific approach to food. And so, and mealtimes were not a happy time for her. They were kind of a grilling. Both of her parents felt that their children needed to be academically very accomplished. So mealtime was a time to test them. How had they mastered multiplication tables or whatever it was? So it's very interesting to me that she came to have a career that was in many ways a rejection of all of the attitudes towards food that she grew up with. I thought that was really interesting. I also thought it was interesting how she identified certain pivotal moments in her life. Definitely one was meeting Jeffrey. She met him when she was 16. And then another moment was seeing that advertisement and buying the Barefoot Contessa. Another moment was having a dinner at a friend's house that was very casual and not a elaborate Julia Child piece de resistance kind of thing. And all these kind of shaped her attitudes towards entertaining.
Yes, I think that is what appeals so much about Ina, is that it's approachable. But also some of these really fancy recipes, like you can do them, but are you going to enjoy? That's true for knitting. There are patterns that I can do them, but am I going to enjoy that fiddliness or the very complicated, your brain explodes, color work, whatever it is. So I think that Ina has struck a balance between, and she talks about her first dinner party, how disastrous it was,
Yeah,
because,
real
and
fast.
I don't know from the guest standpoint whether it was all that disastrous, but she decided to make omelets for everybody. Well, so that meant she was just, and there were a lot of people. I mean, I forget how many people, but
Yeah, it was like 18 people
something
that she
like
was.
that. So she's just in the kitchen the whole time making omelet after omelet, because you can't do all of them at one time. You have to do them one at a time. So she's just one after one. And she wasn't enjoying her guests. She wasn't having fun at her own party. And I think that is what, where the genius comes in, of figuring out what recipes will be really delicious but also fun for you to make and give you time to enjoy being with the people you love.
Yeah, and I think what I liked is the kind of arc of one of the things she said about her childhood was that she felt like they were all about appearances, that they had the nice home in Connecticut. They seemed like the perfect family. The father was a successful surgeon. The mother was home, and yet she felt that it was just all kind of a fake sham. And I think a lot of what later on guided her in her cooking and in her entertaining was this desire for authenticity, that she wanted food to be an expression of love and community and fun and real fun, not just the appearance of fun, not the beautiful dish, but behind the beautiful dish was backbreaking hours in front of a stove and things like that. She wanted it to be casual and fun and kind of all the things that she didn't feel she got as a child. And that became her niche. And part of what she defined herself against was Martha and also Nigella Lawson. She would say, well, I'm not them, and looked for this sweet spot of approachable, delicious, healthy food that was easy to prepare and left you time to enjoy your guests. Ironically, getting to that point, and I think this is what makes it a great story, was not easy and fun and
Right. She buys the place in the Hamptons. And I don't know if it's the first summer or the second summer where she goes to rent a house and she goes to the house and the house has already been rented by another family.
yeah, they've double booked it.
And she went and there was nothing available because, of course, everything in the Hamptons was already booked. So she said, well, I don't actually need it on the weekends. And the family who was renting it as well only needed it on the weekends. So they kind of worked out an arrangement where she stayed there during the week and they stayed there during the weekends. But I mean, just the thought of you go into your rental and there's already someone there.
Yeah. No,
Oh.
and but I did think it was interesting that, I mean, the book is called Be Ready When the Luck Happens. And she talks at the very end in the epilogue about being given an award and being on the stage with Oprah Winfrey. And she's talking about how she was lucky to have all these opportunities. And Oprah smacks her and says, you weren't lucky, you make your own luck. And I have to say, I agree with Oprah. And she talks about this as being when women find success, it's lucky. But Oprah was saying, no, it's not luck. And I do think Ina shows incredible business acumen. She's able to recognize opportunities. And then she's also able to create opportunities and really take advantage of them. And she actually knows how to make a deal with people. And one of her approaches to making a deal is to try to figure out, well, what is it that this person really wants from this? And how can I get them what they want while also getting what I want? It's a very different model of everybody can win in this, as opposed to there's a winner and there's a loser. And I think it's a wonderfully feminine approach to business that is really smart and really refreshing. I do think she makes her own luck. I am going to side with Oprah on that.
It does show also, even though she and Jeffrey had their issues, that for the most part, Jeffrey was very supportive of her going to check out the place in the Hamptons. And also, when she decorates a house, this is
Oh, yeah,
later
this is
on,
great. Yeah.
and she hires a decorator and she's going to spend $5,000 on furnishing the house. And
Which is nothing.
at the time, that was probably in the 70s, 80s. So Jeffrey balks at the $5,000. It's like, but now I'd promised to furnish it beautifully. I called an interior decorator whose work I liked. It was very exciting to hire my first interior decorator, who did a very 70s design with gray carpeted platforms and colorful architectural knoll furniture from the 50s. I loved it. It was simple and modern. The furniture and design proposal for the entire house was $5,000, which I thought was totally reasonable, which of course today seems very reasonable. Jeffrey, on the other hand, said, $5,000? I'm not spending $5,000 on furniture. By now, I should have anticipated this, but I'm always the optimist. When he looked at me incredulously, I said quietly, but it's my hobby, which weirdly made sense to him, and he immediately agreed to do it. To this day, whenever I want to take on a new project, he still teases me about it, knowing I will always get the best of him. I suppose this is your hobby too, he'll ask. Such a good sport. But I love that. Which she says, but it's my hobby.
Hobby, I know.
I love that he was like, oh, this is important to her, and therefore it's important.
Yeah, and I loved how she touches on actually on the net that was on page 114, but on page 115, she talks about reading Gail Sheehy's passages, which I remembered mom reading that growing up. And it's a book about how women find themselves. And she mentions this that there was a lot of emphasis in her household, in particular, for academic achievement for girls to go to college. But then there was the idea that part of what they were going to college for was just to find a husband, and that their real job was to get married and have kids, and that she didn't have a lot of role models for how to navigate that what she wanted to be. And she realized that initially, when she was working at the White House and stuff like that, that she was modeling herself after Jeffrey, and that really wasn't who she was. But the irony is, right at the moment where you've got second wave feminism and women burning their bras, and she says this, I was begging my mother to let me into the kitchen to bake cookies for my boyfriend. She put her finger on something really important there, in that in the wake of all of that women's independence and women's working, there weren't a lot of role models for women. And then there was the problem too, and she makes this point of the promise of you can have it all, but what it came to mean was you had to do it all. You had the job during the day, and then you came home for the second shift.
Right.
And managing the quotidian tasks of a household and how does everyone get fed and laundry and stuff like that, there weren't any role models for that. And there weren't any role models for men either. And she makes that point too, that Jeffrey grew up in a very traditional household where his mother did everything. It wasn't that he objected to doing things, he just didn't really have a model for that either.
Right, it didn't occur to them.
Yeah, I mean, they noticed when things weren't done, but
Right.
it didn't really occur to them that maybe they could step into that void. And then the burden of identifying it and coming up with a solution falls on the person whose quote unquote job it usually is.
Right. There were so many things that I appreciated about her frankness in
Yes.
this, that it seemed like she really wasn't hiding anything. And for our next episode, we are going to talk a bit about Martha Stewart.
Martha
So
Stewart.
we'll leave the comparisons for our next episode, but dun dun dun.
Well, it's a cliffhanger. We're starting 2025 with the cliffhanger. Yes.
Well, I wanted to talk about just one knit project that our sister Les, Melissa.
Hey, Liz.
Hi, Liz. She asked me to make in light of the horrible political situation, she asked me to make her a phoenix hat because she felt like we need to rise from the ashes. And so she wanted me to make basically a black pussy hat, which is a very easy thing to do. just cast on ribbing and then knit in the round, and then you bind off at the top, and that creates the ears. And then I duplicate stitched a phoenix on top.
Wow, Betty.
It was a lot of work.
That seems like a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. She designed the phoenix.
Oh.
So my son came up with that. I'm sure this exists somewhere, but I haven't seen it. But he made graph paper. Knit stitches are not square. They're
Right.
not. So his graph is a little wider than it is tall. So it's like a 3/5 ratio. And she used that to design the phoenix. And the reason that that's helpful is because if you use regular graph paper to design something, it's not going to look exactly like that when
Right.
knit it or do the duplicate stitch or whatever. So that was a really fun project that was
That's
kind of.
an excellent collaboration, and it's very mathy of you and your son to figure out the, yeah, because you can see that it would probably end up being too wide and proportionately not the right. And I love that Liz did the design and you did the knitting, and I think it came out great.
Thank you. Yeah, so we'll put pictures of that on there, and with her beautiful border collie Storm.
Yes, looking up adoringly at
Yes.
her.
Oh, and now I see them in the picture. She's also wearing a cowl that I made her somewhere.
Yes,
So
yeah.
anyway, it's yeah. So that's our hope for everybody that we rise from the ashes.
Yeah, and I think that is an excellent way to close our first episode of 2025, Rising from the Ashes, talking about one of our favorite all-time people, Ina Garten, sharing one of her more healthy recipes, depending on how much cream you add, and her wonderful memoir, Be Ready When Luck Happens. We recommend it to, I actually read it and listened to part of it, and I agree with Booty. It's a great listen to hear it in her voice and to hear her story of how she came to find fulfillment and figure out who she was and what she wanted to do with this precious little time that we all have on this earth. So, with that, I think it's time to say, Booty, whatever you do, don't knit like
Like
my
my
sister.
sister, but do cook like Ina Garten, and do check out the show notes at bootyandbussy.com.